Hey everyone, I'm Ayana.
And I'm Delilah.
And we're the non-corporate girls. This week is episode 20. This is a milestone for us.
It sure is. And why? Because we have Mr. Julian Mitchell himself in the flesh, in person. And we're super hyped.
Welcome to the non-corporate girls. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
I mean, so
congrats on 20 episodes.
Yes.
That is a milestone. 20 is something to be proud of.
It is. And we said on our 20th, we would have our first guest.
Yeah, that's an honor. This is like an inauguration.
It is an inauguration. I always say balloons and streamers should be coming out. And it's also
I need some champagne.
I know.
Y'all need a vibe. Y'all need some.
We did think about that.
We just kind of like messed up a little bit, but it's fine.
You got to put yourself in the space to appreciate 20 episodes.
You're right. And because you probably don't know, like, the consistency for us in previous projects and things haven't always been like met, so for us to like be consistent, continue, because it's always hard in the beginning to start anything, and to keep it going and be able to push through is like what sets you apart.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, you know, so many people talk about getting started or getting into something, like getting their break per se.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't even about getting a break. Like, once you get in the door, you got to sustain that for as long as you can. You gotta continue to elevate your game and push yourself and raise the bars. Like, that's where the work comes in. The work isn't, you do so much work to get your shot or get in the door to establish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The real work comes from, okay, how do you continue to grow and expand and evolve and take things to even higher levels, like 10 years from now? Like 20 episodes, you're thinking like, what could your career as individuals, what could this look like 20 years from now?
200 episodes later.
Yeah, man, for real.
This is why we're going to get into grind versus hustle. But we have to properly introduce you.
Yes.
Because it goes with no mention.
Yes.
Like, Ayana, please do the honors.
Yes. So we just love you. You're an award-winning content creator, multimedia journalist. You have your column at Forbes. You're a contributor for Huffington Post, right?
I still am, but I haven't really contributed in a while. Yeah.
Forbes.
I've just been focused really on Get Paid to Be Yourself and the videos and just all the other things that I'm doing.
I know. Yeah. We love that.
Yeah.
So, and there's so many accolades you have. I mean, helping launch Revolt, like, that's a huge thing. And just like all the people that you've interviewed.
Yeah, it's literally been
a whirlwind.
So many people. No, like hundreds of people. Not just people in a culture, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's been people in a culture from Spike Lee, Ryan Leslie, Nas,
T.I.,
so many people in that realm, but then just entrepreneurs and CEOs and people that's like just hundreds of business leaders and owners and people who are doing really amazing things. And then just creators, like young creators who have done amazing things. I've probably done hundreds of those too, so.
There's so many dope people out in this world.
I know. And it's like you get to uncover them. You're shining this light on
them. What's been so crazy is that, like, you know how Facebook gives you your memories, like your updates?
Yeah.
And I get updates all the time. Like, for example, when Jay-Z dropped 444, and No ID was the sole producer of that, right? And No ID doesn't even really do interviews like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the day it came out, I got a Facebook memory that was like 2 years ago today, the code, a conversation with No ID. And I put our interview and our video out literally exactly 2 years to the day that Jay-Z's album came out. And he was the only producer on that album. And his interview with Rolling Stone came out the next day. And it was just crazy to me to think about that. Like, that's happened so many different times of just seeing
the full circle.
Same thing happened with The Dream. Like, I remember doing the interviews for when Jay-Z dropped Magna Carta, Holy Grail. And we had a series that we produced. It was myself, Ramon, Video Chris, for Revolt when we first launched, called Unlocking the Holy Grail. And I had interviewed all the producers and writers for Jay-Z's album. So it's like Hit-Boy, Mike Will, The Dream, Timbaland. And Ramon did an incredible interview with Timbaland. And so, the same thing, like, I'm seeing those alerts pop up, like, when that stuff's happening. And it's just crazy to think over those years, I'm starting to see for real, like, how much work I've actually been doing for a very long period of time.
Like your receipts.
This is the proof. Like,
you know, and so many people think it started with Revolt because that was such a big thing and like to work. And that was a life changing and career changing experience. Mm-hmm. And working with somebody like Puff is like invaluable on so many different levels. But like even before that, like I get alerts about doing like the commercials for like or the campaigns for Wells Fargo and mm-hmm. Google and Honda and all that when I was a young dude in advertising way before even stepping into that. So like, you know, I screenshot them and I save them, you know, just to like have the memories when I look it up. You know, like I had one of my coworkers who had texted me years ago doing the Best Yourself for Honda, and like seeing that text message, I was like, yo, I remember when you first came up with the manifesto for this, and like to see it like be this commercial and campaign and all that, like it just shows me how you could take an idea and it becomes real. And I'm like, this is 2010.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like 2011. So like thinking about that and thinking about now, yeah, it's just crazy to think of like all the work that you actually have contributed to like this whole, you know, landscape. Because somebody like me, I don't keep a tab. Like, I'm not keeping a running tab of, right. you know, every interview and every story. And you know what I'm saying?
We are.
So it's just humbling, man. The short of it is just, it's just always humbling to be reminded when I'm in a quiet space or when I'm by myself of the outcome of all the work that you pour into.
Absolutely. How many times have you been on this end where you're the one being interviewed?
I would say it's definitely increased over the past couple of years because I feel like, you know, I really genuinely, and it's going to sound real pretentious or whatever, but I'm just going to keep it real. Like, I've been ahead of my time for a minute. Like, a lot of stuff that I would see or talk about or write about, and I ended up contributing to a book with a guy I respect so much.
Disruptive
marketing. And like so many of the insights I said in that book are things that I've wrote about and talked about that are happening. You know what I'm saying? Now.
Right. You've seen them come to light.
Yeah. And that book came out almost a year ago and we did the interview a year previous to that. And I was writing about so many, like so much of this stuff 3 years ago too. You know what I'm saying? And like telling people and interviewing and giving people this platform who I was saying, like, this is why I'm giving this person the platform. And even though it had an impact, people didn't necessarily, like, get it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we don't necessarily see what he's saying or the shift that it's making.
Right.
So even Get Paid to Be Yourself, I started it over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, like, something where, it made a impact just because the idea of, like, Get Paid to Be Yourself was like,
yeah.
Like, what does that mean? It sounds amazing.
Right.
But to get people to really see how that's actually a trend and a real thing that's happening.
And they want to play with the influencers.
Right. Like, it just took time. And, like, what I was saying with even Ryan is, like, there's this new era of influencer. And that's what I was trying to get to. It's not about, like, social influencers who have millions of followers. It's the idea that there's this new breed of people who are creating communities and cultures and things like that around, like, using their mind and content.
Common interests.
So me being on this side is happening a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like that's also a part of me embracing my role in this, like, wholeheartedly, of saying, yo, like, I'm a leader in this shit and I gotta lead. Yes. And I gotta, like,
create more leaders.
Put it on my back. Yeah, it's like, I live by that quote of, like, leaders don't create followers, they create more leaders type thing. It's like, so for me, I just feel like I've also just embraced my position a lot more. And I do it, like,
innately.
Zeroed in. Like, I'm not worried about what other people are doing, what other people are saying. I'm not, like, I'm just focused on what, like, I'm trying to do. And I feel like people are just catching on and starting to realize, damn, like, this dude is, like, really...
Oh, we know.
We knew that the first time we met.
Backtrack, the way we even came, like, across Julian was because the CCNYC, shout out to them, Imani,
yes.
We loved her.
Love her.
You know, you were at that hustle event.
The Complex Hustle panel.
And I didn't really get to, like, although you were on the panel, where we were seating at, it was kind of, like, too far away. I couldn't really hear. But the next time, when you were at the panel with
MemConnect,
and we were right there in front of you, and what you were saying... Like, we became obsessed immediately. And for
he's speaking to us.
And for me, being obsessed with Julian comes from, like, how relatable you are. Like, you've done so much, and your receipts speak for themselves, but you make people feel like you're not too far away from also accomplishing these things as well. Some people put, like, this barrier that it seems unattainable, and so people get, like... feel insecure that their talent is not enough or that it's gonna take so much. I'm sure people helped you get to where you're at, but a lot of it is your own work. Some people feel like it's who you know that's gonna take them, which was
I can genuinely say I've never asked for a favor or an opportunity in my whole career.
Wow.
Like my whole life. I've never been like, yo, can you do this? Can you look out for this? Like, there have been times where I've like took people at their word where they say, yo, you know, if you need this or you need us to support or how can we help you? And I may think about it. Okay, here's how you could help just advance something.
Right.
Not give me something, but like here's how you could help like amplify something or do something. But in terms of like, I've always just had a mentality of like I just... want to prove to myself and do it the way that I see it and carry it all the way through. And I feel like that for me has always been why, number one, I'm not a hater. Number two, like I can help and empower other people and know that has no effect on me getting to where I'm trying to go.
Absolutely.
Because like I take full responsibility for that. Like that's on my shoulders. That's like on me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm coaching myself. Like when I'm by myself, I'm like, all right, yo, like.
You your own
path. And you have your path to walk. Everybody else has their own path to walk. So like.
Yeah. So like that's the way that I kind of even look at that is I always say too, one thing I tweet all the time too is like be your own life coach. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes you got to be your own coach, and it's always been that way even since high school, middle school, coming up. I used to just be the hardest worker all the time. Like I was never the most talented, the greatest athlete. I just outworked everybody.
From you know that time then, where was your energy going into? Like, do you see it? Like, did you want to become a journalist? Was that the idea always?
Yeah. I never had a moment where I was like, I want to be a journalist. In fact, when I first got into high school, when I was a freshman in high school, my journalism teacher, I took a journalism class, and my journalism teacher oversaw the newspaper, obviously, Mr. Fick. And as a freshman in high school, he made me the editor of the paper. And just from what we would write in journalism class, and I'm the freshman, I'm fresh in school, you know. And I remember they had like an open house. And I was adopted, so my adopted parents came to the open house. And I remember he had a conversation with them and was like, you know, Julian is so talented, he's a genius. And I was like, what is he talking about? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what he's talking about. And he was like, yeah, he's a genius. I'm telling you, he's a genius. And he made me an editor of the paper. And so I was writing about, you know, like what was happening on campus and football games and basketball games. You know, just like high school stuff. Yeah. You know, here's what people are talking about in the halls. And I had no idea what that even like meant. Or that I ever would have a career in it. And then in high school also, I would go to these different like conferences and stuff, right? And it would just be dialogue. But they would pick people at these conferences because they would always do them in partnership. I grew up in Vegas, and they would do it in partnership with like Las Vegas Review Journal or the Las Vegas Sun, which are the two biggest newspapers. And they would say, oh, pick a student who you feel like most represents the voice of this particular like topic. And I would always get picked. And one year I got picked, and they were like, all right, because you got picked, you get to write an op-ed for the paper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I still have it to this day. Yeah, it's like, I wrote one about law and crime. It was like this whole thing. And so you worked with an actual editor from the paper.
Right.
And you wrote this piece. But I'm still thinking in my mind, oh, this is just, you know, part of this conference. I'm going to write this one off. Ooh. And it wasn't until I got out of college that when I was in college, I wanted to be a politics major. I thought I was going to be a politician or a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah. And my advisor was like, yo, man, I had this whole plan of how I wanted to change the world and, like, be a politician. So and my advisor was basically like, yo, you know, you could do that, but you have these ideas and you have this, like, imagination and this passion. If you can just translate those ideas on any medium to anybody, there's nothing you can't conquer.
So you just had these people who saw these things in you.
That's what I would say. It's like, yeah. It was always at different checkpoints, people who saw things mm-hmm. and said very definitive things that, like, stuck with me, that started to reveal themselves mm-hmm. to me. Like, in my own mind, I started to be like, yo. Like, I remember there were a couple of different times that happened. There's my advisor who made me an English major and told me that's why I need to be an English major. And then I took an English class that changed my life. Then there was a time where one of my mentors was like, when I was throwing concerts and I actually moved to New York and was like blogging and all that. And he was like, yo, you got these tools, man. I'm telling you, like, you don't even need to, you could learn the business. You could learn any of these businesses, right. But you got, like, the tools, yo. Like, you know, people make careers out of the stuff that you're doing. I had no idea what he was talking about. And then later down the road, that became the foundation for the agency that we mm-hmm. were doing. Then there was a time where, like, when I was at Revolt, and I started seeing, like, yo, I want to do so much more. I want to talk about so much more. Like, I started to really come into my own and have this bigger vision. And I had a friend of mine who sat down with me and was just like, you could do so much more. And I'm like, I didn't even say to her what I was thinking. We're sitting down. She's just like, yo, you could do so much more. She's like, you know what? I feel like you're just being called to do so
much.
That's
powerful. That is
and,
very powerful.
And it's like one of those things where, like, it, you know, when it cuts through, like, mm-hmm. when it means something. And when she said that to me,
right,
I was like, yo, okay, I've been thinking about this. But, like, because I had this vision at that time where I said, okay, this is cool, but I see myself writing, teaching, and building mm-hmm. brands, right?
Right.
And so I saw that in my mind. I didn't know how it was going to come to pass. There was no Forbes at this time, no Huffington Post at this time, no BDAB show, none of that.
Right.
And when she said that to me, it, like, clicked. It was like, yeah.
And I can see why. Because, like, you've been doing all this stuff that's kind of been, like, adding up to this bigger goal, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
And now it just clicked, right?
And you... Yeah. You naturally captivate, because, I mean, we're sitting here right now, and me and Ayana are so used to being the ones to always talk. Like, we just sit here and listen the
I never,
whole
like,
time.
Like,
yeah, like, it's just about everything that you have to offer and everything that you pour back out into people.
Yeah, I think a big part of the lesson in that, and something that I try to tell people, is, like, you have to be an active listener to life. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you have to understand the formula of your life. And you have to trust the timing of your life. Like, the first part of it is being an active listener is, even when people talk about the way that you pray, if you feel like there's the, if you believe in the law of attraction, let's just start there. If you believe in the law of attraction, and Ryan said a lot in the talk about, like, lowering the barrier of luck, right?
Yes.
If you believe in the law of attraction and you believe and these universal principles of, like, karma, right? Like, the intention, the energy you put out,
you get
back.
You get back, yeah.
Then you start to say, there are, like, I have this power and these ideas and this vision and this imagination, and it's tapped into this force and this energy that's, like, happening around me. And so you know that everything is moving moment by moment, second by second, move by move. So when you start to think like that, you're like, okay.
Everything matters.
Exactly.
Like,
I need to be listening for the cues in every moment. I need to be aware. I need to be paying attention.
Them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be listening. Like, what am I learning? You know what I'm saying? I need to be hearing what's happening. And then when you hear what's happening, you're getting the guide.
Right.
And then when you get the guide and you start to like establish real intent of like, yo, okay, this is what I'm deciding I want to do. I'm deciding the type of impact I want to make, or I'm deciding the type of person and the type of energy and all that I want to put out into the world.
Do you feel that developed?
That's when you do that.
Or
for me?
Yeah.
I think it definitely developed. Mm-hmm. Like, I always had passion. I always had like tremendous drive and passion, and like it just never was directed. It was never necessarily like focused. I didn't know what it meant, what it was going to be used for.
Right.
I just had this power. Like, now I realize it was like really this power to like manifest and build stuff. But it was always like case by case. It would be like, oh, I really want to do this concert, or I really want to do this, or I really see this and that. And so I would just see it as, oh, I just am really passionate about something that I want to do, and I know how to go make it happen. I didn't see the bigger picture of what that really meant of like, okay, well, if I really see something
and bring it to life,
I can really go bring it to life. That's when those conversations, like I said, where he's like, yo, do you understand how powerful this is? Do you understand what this means? Do you understand, like, do you get the tools that you actually possess right now? I don't know if you understand, you know, what that means. And that was taking some up, because it used to also be this chip, you know what I'm saying, that I used to carry on my shoulder, because I was always down for the fight, you know what I'm saying? I was always down for like, all right.
You didn't think it was always going to be that easy type of thing?
My life was never that easy. So I was always used to being the underdog. I was always used to being the fighter. I was always used to being like the rebel, survivor, warrior mentality. That's why I worked so hard. I was always like,
you're not going to count me out.
I could black out, you know what I'm saying, and go hard. And it's just going to happen whether you like it or not, whether you feel away or not. Like, what I see is about to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
right.
I could always get in that zone. So I started to embrace that chip. So when I would be in certain spaces, or people would tell me no, or they'd be like, that can't happen, or you can't do this, or your circumstance is this.
Like, watch me.
Like, when I used to say fuel, yo, I used to literally be like, all right. You know, I used to just be like,
real.
Oh, my bad.
Yes.
Real cool. I started calling it like being bulletproof to the shots. Like, I just started like getting to a place where I would take what Puff always says, I could show you better than I could tell you. I started just being like, all right. Like,
I mean, actions speak louder than words.
You can say, the best way to tell you what I'm doing is to show you what I already did, right? Like, let me show you what it is.
Right.
So that was the thing. So it developed over time through a lot of trial and error, and being stubborn, being very hell-bent. Like, I went through a lot of suffering and struggling just because I was so like locked into this vision that I had. Like, I spent a lot of years like struggling, you know what I'm saying?
What was that struggle,
man? I mean, in my professional life, that was like the, you know, it's funny when Ryan was talking about like being a Harvard grad and still being in garages and stuff like that. I remember I went to Occidental, which was considered like a Harvard level school, like the West Coast, and I went there on scholarship, and being there, you know, you have all these people that are like, yo, you're at Oxy, you know, you could go be a corporate person. You can go do all these different types of things. But I just really had this like vision of what I wanted to do. And I was so like committed to it. And so for me, that was like, I spent a lot of time dead broke. I slept on a lot of floors, a lot of couches. You know, I spent a lot of time doing like as many side jobs as possible just to keep some money in my pocket, like getting my phones cut off, like going. I used to do this thing where when I was hustling, I used to go from one carrier, then they cut my phone off. Then I go to the next carrier, get a phone, they cut my phone off, go to the next carrier. Then when I ran out of carriers, I would go to Cricket, I'd go to Metro PCS, and just pay like whatever little bread I could come up with to have a phone. Like, part of why I have the phone number I have now, like, I haven't changed it, is because like that's the same number I had when I paid my first $50 to get a Metro PCS, when I first finally got some bread in my pocket. Like, I kept that number as a reminder. I still have the phone. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there were just so many times, and you're dealing with all the people and, like, all the struggles of, like, I used to walk to meetings for hours. Like, if I had meetings with people, I used to walk. Oh. Like, I used to just do crazy stuff like that. And just, you know what I'm saying? Just just, like, so committed to it. And I had so many times where, like, you get right close to the finish line and it doesn't happen. And you get right close to it, it breaks down. You get right to a great place and it's boom. Or you do it and it falls through. And it's like, I had so many of those experiences, you know? Like, and that's part of why I asked the question, too. Because I've been in the position that I know plenty of people have where you know you're talented enough. Mm-hmm. Like, you know you're capable enough. But you don't understand why it's not clicking, why it's not working, why, you know, and you are somebody who you're not begging people for opportunity. You're not out
like
here.
You like, really out here working. Really out here
putting work. There are examples. Exactly. Like, non-corporate girls came from that same mentality.
Yeah. You're out here really putting the work in and you're not getting it, you know. But that is the learning curve that evolves because you haven't had the life experience to know. Number one, that failure happens. It's not something that you're like, oh, it could happen. No, you're going to fail.
Right.
You're going to hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. You're going to suffer and struggle. Mm-hmm. You're going to have mad times where you're going to question, like, yo, am I making a crazy-ass decision?
Should I even be doing this?
I could go get a job. You know, I could go get a regular job. I could go do X, Y, and Z. Like, I could find a more comfortable route to take than the road that I'm on. But then you realize that, like, the people who are crazy are sane, and people who are sane are crazy. It's like
the ones
who made it are the ones, like, the ones who really made a change in the world are the ones that actually had the audacity to say, I'm gonna go completely against the grain.
Yeah.
All in the name of following and staying true to this vision that I have. So I feel like I had that very early on, and I was trying to make sense of it in this whole process of, like, yo, I don't understand why people don't get it. I don't understand why people, you know, are rubbing it off. I don't understand why it's not clicking. I don't understand why it's not moving. Because, you know, like, it's like, when it's you see it. You're like, this shit makes sense to me. I see exactly.
You gotta enroll people in your vision.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, and that becomes the turning point where you have to decide either you're just gonna go the comfortable route or you're never gonna quit. You know, like, that's the moment where you have to decide for yourself, all right, am I riding for me or am I not? Like, and once you decide to ride, you gotta ride. It's like your best friend is like, you gotta be your best friend. You gotta be your own ride or die. Like, yeah, okay. Like, if we ride, you know what I'm saying? But then the benefit of that is when you get to a certain place, you really can bet on yourself and not think twice. Good, bad, or indifferent, it cannot work out, but you feel completely confident and unapologetic about saying, whatever decision I just made, I'm rolling with it.
Right.
Two, you're like, all right, you sharpen that instinct. When we talk about listening, you get to a point where when you ride with yourself through the ups and downs, the peaks and the valleys, like rock bottom, and you don't run from it, like, you embrace it, you absorb it, and you keep it pushing, you get to a point where your instinct, like, you start to feel things. You, like, you know what's really not right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And what is right. Like, your instinct and your discernment and all that, like, becomes so much more
second nature.
Senses, like,
they're heightened.
You know what I'm saying? So you know, like, yo, I don't like this energy around me. I don't need these people. Yeah. I don't need to be in these, like, everybody else could go to that. I don't need to be there. I don't need to do this.
That's so true.
And you become your own person.
And as you level up, I'm sure we've all realized, like, as you level up, it gets less, like, that crowd starts to diminish and it's less people.
The metaphor I use for that is the air is thinner at the top. That's what I always tell people.
It's
like when you climb a mountain.
Not everybody can breathe that same air,
But that also means, like, you gotta train for this.
Right.
You gotta, like, get your heart right, your stamina right, your mind right, you gotta get your physicality right.
Everything
you gotta
needs
like,
to be like
exactly. The air is thinner at the top, it's less people, it's harder to breathe, it's more pressure, it's higher altitude.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, like, not everybody can climb there, and there's only so much room at the peak.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody can't go. And it's like, that brings up the Snoop reference where he's like, yo, when you're getting here, you only have two options. Either you go back down
right.
to where people are and try to pull them up, or they got to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, that's the space you got to be in. Yeah, when you get to the top, it just becomes, or as you're elevating, the higher you go, the thinner the air, the harder it is to breathe, the more trained and healthy and sharp and on your game and all that you have to be to stay
and
there.
And this is why we appreciate, I think, yeah. Ayana and me are always constantly going to events, being a part of different networking groups because, mm-hmm. you know, your childhood friends, your family, it's not that they're not creating their dreams and going after what they want, but not all the time they understand, like, our dreams. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you need to stay around people who get it. So I appreciate the people who get it. I'm constantly
trying to stay around the people who get it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, to keep growing that community, I guess, of the people who believe in what you're doing.
Because most of the time, we're alone on this journey, right?
Well, I was gonna say, when you were saying that, too, is I think one of the biggest shifts that can happen is when you change the way you look at being alone. Like, because a lot of times people see that as this negative. It's like, I feel so isolated and so alone
mm-hmm.
in the way that I think, in the way that I see things, in this path that I'm on. It's like, you got to embrace that, because nobody actually, like, to be completely honest, mm-hmm. people could be like-minded in terms of you could share
right.
similar values
right.
and interests, but nobody actually ever gets it. And nobody's ever going to get it because they're not you.
Right.
And, like, every mm-hmm. single person, at a certain point, there's going to be a cutoff. There's going to be a break. There's going to be a point where exactly what you see is not what somebody else sees. That's legitimate. So
that's true.
While you appreciate that people may be for what you're for
mm-hmm.
or against what you're against,
right.
that doesn't necessarily mean they're on the same page.
I mean, not necessarily the same page, but it's just mm-hmm. like, as creatives,
like,
we know what walls we hit. We know when it can
right,
get tough or get...
Like, we understand the hustle of what we're all doing.
Of
right?
course.
But the vision
might be...
Thing.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
It is a different thing.
And I just, like, feel like more people need to... Because so much of... If you think of it like this, right? Like, when we talk about life's work,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, whatever you're doing is, like, your life's work.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, so much of who somebody is, like, at the core, right? Like, being your own person, having your own identity, is tied to that. So if you don't embrace being in your own lane, in your own world, in your own life, in your own vision, that's almost the same as saying you've never fully embraced who you are.
Right.
You never fully become your own person, because there's a small part of you that doesn't want to let all the way go and say, I may just be on this road all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's people around me who support me, but I'm saying, in terms of, people may never see what I see. They may never know exactly what
I'm
doing.
And that's okay.
They may never understand. And
that's
okay.
Yeah, so
but
so
that
okay.
makes so many people scared.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
like,
mm-hmm.
if I can't make it so clear to you, to where you know you nod your head and say, I get it. That scares people. Yo, if it's not,
because they feel like they don't have the cosign, or like that it doesn't give the not authenticity. That's not the word I'm saying. Like, it doesn't validate what their vision
is. And some people really
need that
validation to make it real.
Yes, and I.
You know what I'm saying?
And what do you tell that person who needs that validation? Because I come from where I'm unsure. I mean, I've grown a lot as a person, where like I've truly become like believing in myself. But sometimes here and there, it comes a point where you feel like, and it's not that I need validation because I want to continue, but sometimes you need to know when to let go, because
yeah.
you don't know if like you should keep on, but because nobody else is on board with you and
yeah.
they're not seeing exactly how you've seen, you don't know when you
but
should let go.
But that's where you gotta be your life coach, right?
Facts.
That's where you gotta push yourself. You gotta ride or die for you.
You gotta know, like, the greatest analogy that I can think of off top when I think about that, I had an experience where, when it came to spiritually, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for a lot of people, church is what validates their belief.
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
the religion they subscribe to is what validates their belief system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or their definition of spirituality, God, like their
right.
connection to everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the validation is literally in, I can say I'm a Christian, I can say I'm a part of the church. I can say I practice X. I can say I read this book. Mm-hmm. I do this X, Y, and Z, right? But then you would say the difference is saying, okay, so if I believe at the core, beyond the church, beyond the Bible and everything, that a God exists, like God exists, or there's this force in the universe that I feel, that I know is real, mm-hmm. period, like it's a part of my life, then you would say to yourself, well, would that relationship, would that belief still be there if a church never existed? Mm-hmm. If a religion never existed, if there was no religion, would I still believe that this force was real? Would I still believe that what I'm feeling and seeing and hearing and touching every day was real? And then you think to yourself, you're like, well, it's got to be real because I feel it and I hear it and I see it every day. So I'm not making this up. You know what I'm saying?
Like something's there.
Something's there. Right. And that goes without validation because I literally experience that every day. So then you're thinking to yourself, you're like, so what would my relationship to this force or to God be if there was no church, if there was no religion? Because it's real, right? So then when you feel that, you're thinking to yourself, well, that's almost the same analogy of saying,
Michael,
if you have this vision that you know is real, that you see, you can feel, you can touch, it wakes you up, you know it's your mission.
Fuck everybody else.
Yeah, it's like, so do you, like, do you necessarily need the format, the people, the like, do you need all of that to tell you that what you're feeling is real?
It's like, X out that middle person.
Yeah, it's like, what is that? Yeah. And I feel like that's like the journey for people that most don't take because it's so easy to fall back Pop into. Out. Exactly. And say, boom. Because you wouldn't know. That's too personal, right? Like, you really have to go on your own path. And you have to ask yourself the hard questions. Like that's a hard question for people. Like, would I still believe in God if there is no church and no religion?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But that's how real life is. Yeah. That's how real this is. So it's like the same type of thing is if you have a vision that literally could be attached to your life's mission. Mm-hmm. Who are you looking at to validate that? Like, who are you really hoping, like, gives you the green light? You know what I'm saying? Like, gives you the sign off. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you really, you know, like, part of you has to just validate yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, like, part of you just has to say, look, boom, I feel it. It's there. I know it's real. I see it. It's not right in front of me, but it's there. I validated shit. Stamp, notarized, be out.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel like,
and that's
like
part
two
of it.
Snaps for that.
Well, does that make sense though?
It makes perfect sense.
So it's like that. That is like the differentiator because, like, it's faith. That's like the substance of things hoped for, right? Yeah. The evidence of some shit that ain't even there yet.
And quieting
the noises,
because that's what gets you off that path again when you're not used to being in your own quiet space with just yourself, because that's usually what happens. Like, either somebody's talking you out of it, telling you can't, is all these
that clutter.
And Jay-Z talks about that where he's like, yo, you really have to get to a level of self-awareness to where you can quiet all the noise around you, because the world is projecting onto you. People are projecting onto you their fears, their shortcomings, their doubts, their dreams, their insecurities. Like, they're looking through a lens of their own experience. So it's never going to be through the lens of exactly what your experience is. It's always going to come through a filter of their own. So then it's like, if you're even looking for validation, you're always borrowing equity off somebody else's perspective and, like, experience to even get that answer.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
So it's like, if that's the case, you're always taking... It's like when they say when you have sex, right, you always take a part of that person, just regardless. Once you do it, like, there's a part of that person that is with you. Like, it's the same thing when you open up and just let in all the noise. Like, there's little pieces of that that start to, like, attach itself to what you're feeling and seeing. So now you're considering all these little micro opinions that are just like diseases mm-hmm. on top of like
yeah. the and really, shit that you see. Your opinion matters is your own.
Exactly.
That's it.
Because mm-hmm. who got to live with it?
You.
Like, for me, when I ask people their opinion, I usually don't ask to actually make a decision. I usually ask to hold the decision I'm going to make up to people who've already done it, people who may have already, like, seen it or had their own experience, mm-hmm. so that I can weigh it that way. You're not going to people to say, yo, tell me what decision I should make. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's more like, yo, I am going to make X, or I feel like I'm gonna do this.
But don't you sometimes yeah. already make decisions, but then you want
to
see,
you just want to
ask somebody, like, I already decided.
Yeah, you just want to get another outlook. But that's the thing, is like, you're not looking for that person to validate your decision.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not looking for them to be like, okay, I'm gonna call them and hopefully they tell me they would do this too, because then that means I should do it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's not
how this should work.
Nah, it's like, okay, this is what I feel like. This is what I'm gonna do. This is what I'm about to do. So right. let me call this person because I'm about to do this and just get a second opinion before I go do this.
Right.
But you're gonna still do it anyway?
Are you gonna still do it anyway?
You may, but this is the thing, is like, you're not looking for them to give you an answer. You're looking to hear about an experience that may give you a new
another way to approach it.
Exactly. It may give you an outlook where you're like, oh, I didn't think about that, so maybe for me I shouldn't do that.
Right.
Okay.
I was going to do it. But that isn't about them telling you you shouldn't do it. It's like, okay, after hearing their experience, okay, I didn't consider that.
It's like, when you're listening to information, you take what's for you.
Exactly. Yeah. You take pieces of it and you apply it to your own way of thinking.
All that data.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, I'm here to get the blueprint literally verbatim and I'm going to do exactly what you did and take it and go do something. I want to take pieces of it and apply it to the way that I'm thinking and I'm looking at things. And like, that's like a difference.
Absolutely. Well, that was definitely on a positive note. We could have like segue into that.
And like that was
a positive note. Let's talk. No, this is amazing. And I was just gonna say though, people do need this actually. So this is all good. Just speaking of all the information, kind of going into like a hustler spirit, that yesterday was pretty incredible. And I feel like you and Ryan Leslie, like, y'all, like, I wonder what y'all conversations are like outside of like all these people.
Alien talk.
Only
y'all are both up there when it is
I feel like yesterday I was more of just kind of like,
he took over, right?
Facilitating. I was more of like, okay, let me throw him a couple softballs and let him like run with it. And also, I thought it was really dope. Shout out to Ryan, because part of why I did that too was knowing the time frame, because he was trying to catch a flight.
Yeah.
Right.
So a part of it too, at the end of it, was saying, okay, let me let him, like, let me let people, you know, ask as many questions and try to get as much out of it as possible. And, you know, Ryan likes to talk too, so let me just give him, you know, like, just go.
I know.
And then when he extended it, it just made it even. Exactly.
It made it dope. People asked him really good questions.
Yeah, people asked him really good questions. And he was like accommodating that too. He's like, I'm going to just get this one more question.
He's really about relationship building.
Oh my God.
And it's crazy. Yeah, the conversations that him and I have are literally like, it's about the future. It's about like really, it's truly about empowering too. Like we talk a lot about how do we make like creators smarter, more powerful, more equipped. Like, what are the white spaces and the blind spots that these huge companies are missing? Like, what are the messages and the stories that people aren't talking about? What are, like,
we need to fill the cracks.
Yeah, like, what one thing Ryan does that it's not like for the public, like, it's not in the public eye, but one thing Ryan does that's really dope is he hosts these like talks, almost like these think tanks in different cities, and where he'll bring together this really curated group of just dope young entrepreneurs, thinkers, creatives, and literally it's these think tanks about, like, what are you guys seeing? What do you think is the future? What is, you know, and it's literally these brain trusts where people come out of it thinking about and really acting on how do we design the future, you know? So that's what those conversations are like. And someone like Ryan is like a great example, and he's perfect because he's been on so many different ends of the spectrum. Like he's, and that's part of why I set it up the way that I did too, is giving people a little bit of the backstory, because this is somebody who has been ahead of his time literally for so long. Like going to Harvard at 14, thinking he's going to be a neuroscientist.
Yeah, I don't even know.
And he was being modest, but if I showed you that clip, you know exactly where I was coming from, that music clip.
Yeah.
He's playing every instrument. You know what I'm saying? Like every single instrument.
He's another Stevie J.
It was crazy. And if you watch any of his YouTube videos, like the dude is musically, he'll lead a club, come into the studio in his like whole fit.
He's incredible.
Set the camera down, get a little melody, like build it, be playing the drums on the keys. And next thing you know, you got the whole beat. Then he records it himself, his whole record, and he goes right back out the studio. It's like he just embodies so many different aspects of creativity and do it yourself and the hustle and the grind, and like he's always been that. So I feel like he represents for this generation who just has to be immersed in music, technology, marketing, social, mobile, all these things.
I'm so glad I got put onto him because I feel like I was missing out. Like I didn't realize how much Ryan Leslie has contributed to, like,
it's crazy.
Beyond the culture, beyond the music.
I'm like, so, I knew a little bit, but just hearing him yesterday, and especially how he talks his passion about it all, was like, I don't know, inspiring.
Yeah.
It was just,
and I'm talking about when I say ahead too, you can check the receipts. I remember 2 years ago when we did the first event, when we did the first anything, and then even a year ago when we did the code, and he talked about it. Like, we did a story about how he was beating Facebook to enterprise messaging, and he was years ahead of Facebook. Like, they still haven't caught up to that. Salesforce, all these big people, they're trying to figure out how to know who their number one customers are and how to know these people's birthdays, names, all that. Like, these people are still trying to figure it out. I get big companies that pitch me from Forbes all the time, like, oh, you know, we know this is something you're passionate about. We got this company. I'm like, okay, so this is a $100 million company with all this staff, and they still ain't figured this out yet. And I know somebody who's figured this out on a mobile phone.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, this is what's going on.
But y'all not trying to hire us.
You know what I'm saying? Like, 2 years ago? So for me, he's you know, even been ahead of that with Superphone and knowing and being able to manage it all from his mobile. He literally manages a full-on multi-million-dollar enterprise on his mobile device.
Crazy.
That is insane.
Yeah, so that's what people are trying to figure out how to do as companies, let alone as individuals now. Like, when he says he manages 67,000 people, he's very serious. If you see his phone, he can say, like, search by friends, search by family, search by journalists, search by investors, search by this and that, search by birthdays, who's the last person to tweet me, who's the last person to buy my album, who's like, and it literally filters and shows him
to the T
where they are, to a T.
Yeah, I was fascinated.
Right? Like, we were sitting there like,
because I was like, Ayana, why could you think of something like, because, you know, there's just some people that are like, no, I definitely said that there's just some people.
That's what she's telling me, though, while we're like, sitting there.
Because there's just certain people that are good with the follow-up. They're good with, like, whose birthday, like, it's, like, when you translate that, it's that what he has. True. And I'm just like, it's so crazy.
It was really incredible. We thank you. Well, obviously, we think you did a great job, obviously, facilitating.
He's trying to ask me that, but I appreciate it.
No, you've been like on a Julian tour.
You would be like, yo, they be showing up way too much. And we coined you. We have a nickname for you.
What is it?
Yes, we call you our fairy godbrother.
Hey! Oh my god.
We like, because you just enlighten us in a way you probably haven't even realized. And it comes more. It just is so true. What's but the person who invited us was the guy from Journal Society. Shout out, friends. He hit me up, and he was the one that let us know about it. And then I seen afterwards that you were the one facilitating. I was like, this.
It was, but that's God though, because he wanted us to see you again.
Listen to everything that you had to say.
So you can drop gems per your door.
Yeah, but
so
I would say too,
our fairy godbrother, guys.
The last thing I would say about that is, that event was super dope because you had this whole crowd and it was a huge crowd.
It was a lot of people.
Like, you, yes, he stood up because he was like, y'all can't see me in the back.
Which I thought was so dope.
Yeah, that was dope.
So dope. Because not everybody
has a good switch. Yeah, that was a good switch. But to get this whole crowd of people in there, like young, fly, creative people who are actually in there thinking about making their lives better and making their careers better in a way where it's like, okay, we could make this cool. Like, we could make this the thing that people want to do on a weekend, on a weekday.
Yeah.
Like, if we could start to make that something that is a habit, like a routine. Like the same way people hit you up, like, what are you doing tonight? What are you... Mm-hmm. Oh, let's go to this talk. Yo, let's go to this workshop. Yo, let's all sit and we can have drinks or whatever and get fly, play some music, be around fly people. But let's talk about, like, building some shit. Let's talk about, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Make that... Make
with substance.
Make being smart fly. Like, let's make making smart decisions, like, sexy. Let's make... Mm-hmm. Like,
talk
shit.
That. I'm like, yes.
No,
yes.
I'm saying, like, let's like really make it something that people are looking forward to and it becomes a lifestyle. And
yes.
I feel like that was the makings of, at least, especially in New York City, too. Mm-hmm. Like, the community in New York City is like, that's the makings of how we can actually, like, make culture smarter and make it cool to be people who want to go out and change the world in a very, like, real way.
And even to amplify it, maybe is the beginning of leaving things behind that are gonna matter. Because one thing that, like, stood out to me in the 444 album was leaving a legacy. Like, I want to leave something for my children, leave something like, I wasn't fortunate to be anything being left behind for me, like, you know. So it's like, how could we expand and, like, really have, like, generational wealth?
Right.
And maybe through our creativeness, maybe this is the start of that as well.
Yeah, one lesson with the 444 album to that was basically this idea that when you talk about the wealth gap, it's less about this huge space that we need reparations to fill or we need to do that. It's like, no, the gap's already been filled. We just aren't, like, utilizing our money in the right ways to exercise that power. It's almost like
we're giving it back to them. I feel like when we spend on Gucci, when we spend on, like, I don't even want to give them shout outs honestly. I'm not gonna mention those brands, but y'all know exactly who we're talking about.
It's just like, we keep that $1 trillion in a checking account while all these other people keep it in property and just assets, you know what I'm saying? It's like, how do we start to turn this liquid into assets? Because then you'll realize that we already have more economic leverage than all these people. That's what, it's literally as simple as solving the riddle of how do we, just as a black culture in general by itself, have more purchasing power than any other demographic, but we're not the wealthiest. That literally would not make sense. That'd be like stumping you. Like, okay, so we don't have the most money, but we can actually buy more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense? Oh, it's because the wealthiest people in the world, their net worth is an accumulation of all of their assets. So it's not necessarily, if you looked in their checking account, what their balance is. It's saying, oh, their companies that they own are worth this much. The property they own is worth this much. The stocks and shares, if you were to pull that out right now, will be worth this much.
Right.
We literally say, we got $1 trillion in cash ready to spend right now.
Right.
Our money just ain't nowhere else.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's, like, the difference that I feel like the album is trying to say is, yo, wake up. Yeah, you have the money.
Mm-hmm.
We all know you got the money, but what are you doing with the money? You know what I'm saying? Because then you would wake up and realize that you already have the power. You're just not using it.
It's about, like, working smarter, not harder.
Right.
Which you mentioned in a lot of your articles and your messaging.
And I say that all the time. That's true. It's so true.
And it sounds so simple,
but obviously it's not.
Nah.
Well, we had a really great time at the event yesterday, so that was really cool.
Yeah. I got one coming up to the 26th with Swiss Beats. Swiss Beats and Gary Vaynerchuk at the Rap Genius Space, or Genius Space, in Brooklyn. More info will be let out on that.
We will be there. Everybody will be there.
I'm like, well, we don't know about this.
Because there is more info coming soon. Okay. And this goes on Friday, so.
Yeah, that's going to be dope. There'll be more info by tomorrow or Friday?
Oh, yeah, tomorrow. Today's Thursday.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, tomorrow at 1. Our episodes drop every Friday at 1.
Okay, every Friday. Yeah, so there'll be more info on that. But and anybody who's following me or Swiss or anything, there'll be more info on that coming out.
Speaking of Rap Genius, congratulations to Rob.
Rob Martin.
Yeah, he put out an album. Oh, it's coming out on July 28th.
He has an album coming out, his debut. The first song is the one, from what I understand, the first song that he put out was the one that he freestyled on Breakfast Club, and then supposed to be putting more music out.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, Rob's an OG.
And I've been following him for a while, and like I've seen him like before he made his move to Rap Genius, and he contributes a lot to the culture, and he's just like super hip hop.
So, Wendu, I got a shout out on that note. Shout out to Ramon Dukes, who is the head of programming and news at Revolt. But Ramon was a huge like teacher and mentor for me, and Ramon started the careers of Rob Markman, of Sway, of Nadeska, who's on Everyday Struggle.
Yes, with Joe Burke, which I'm a fan of.
All first jobs. Yeah, Shaheem, Reed, all these people. He's an OG. He's been like the silent godfather to all the people who have contributed so much to the culture. So shout out to Ramon.
Oh, we got that. And that's funny that you say that because one of the questions is going to be like, who are people like that you feel we should know? Or like that, you know, their names have
shaped you or gave you
people
like...
shaped me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say Ramon is definitely one. He is somebody who just has so much game because... So Ramon is somebody who... was really at the core of MTV News when it was built up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing the first Kanye interviews. Like, he put some of those tapes out. Like, you know, he's interviewed Jay multiple times. He's just a true craftsman at this. Like, he knows what he's doing. So he's MTV News spearheading
that. That's the era.
MTV Jams, like him and Tuma building MTV Jams up. Him doing the top five MCs, like Ramon working and putting that together to Rap Fix and all of that. So a lot of that stuff that's been big in the culture from MTV News to MTV Jams and all that, like Ramon's been at the forefront and had his hand in all of that. And so, you know, for me, he taught me a lot about that, like being a student of the game, like respecting that, a lot about truly pushing yourself and perfecting your craft, the work ethic, like how you have to be, like how you have to always be on, and you have to always be ready to do this. Simple things too, like, you know, if you're interviewing somebody, you need to think of it like every single question should be a story itself. Everything you ask should be able to be its own video, or, you know, how to produce, how to handle things. I remember he knew Nas was my favorite artist, and I remember on the 20th anniversary of Illmatic, he was like, "You're doing the Nas interview." You know what I'm saying?
That's like epic.
You know, but just like stuff like that to be like, all
people
right,
having those notes.
Like, go, you know, if you really want to be great and you can do this, like, go be great. Go do this. Like, go. You know, we used to roll to all the festivals, all the things, and like we're a team, like it was like tag team. So it also showed me that importance of, in this game, like having that sidekick, having that person that like you can get game from and you can go to and who's gonna push you and like give you that. He's been huge. Will Campbell, who was huge, who is the owner of Quantasy, was huge. From when I was in college, he was the Oxy alum too.
Okay.
To now, he's the one who told me, like, yo, you don't realize this is a career. He's the one who was like, when I was doing concerts, he was helping me book all the artists because he was in the music business. And he just recognized my hustle and was always giving me game, like, along the way. And watching him and how he moved and how he talked and how he did business, I learned a lot just, like, watching him. So he was huge. Puff was incredibly huge. You know, like, his biggest thing was always, like, I don't want to know what you did right. I want to know what you do better. you know, because like if you're working with me and I got you on my team, I expect you to be great. So I want to know how you can get better, you know, than that. Or like, you know, like I said before, the person with the information has the power that came from him. Like, so many things about what it really takes to do this at the highest level and be great at it, and the type of mentality you got to have and the type of grind you got to have. And I remember even starting Revolt, like that first meeting with him, when it was literally like it was in the beginning, in the conversation we had and how passionate he was about that, and then the boot camp that ensued after that for months, you know what I'm saying?
How many people were part of that boot camp?
And part of that boot camp was me.
Oh,
that was me. Because he was like, yo, because Revolt was the first network ever to launch digital first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I was ahead of that. So, and I was the youngest. I had never been to television before. I'm coming out of advertising, and I'm working with nothing but TV veterans. Like, all these people are people who've been.
And you weren't intimidated.
And all that stuff. I wasn't intimidated. For me, it was the challenge. Like I said before, I came into it like, all right, this feels right. This feels like where I need to be. When I had that conversation with him, we're watching Stokely Carmichael, like, interviews and James Baldwin and talking about culture and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, this is me. This is who I am.
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, all right, Julian, you always said you wanted to have an impact at this level. Now you have to prove that your shit is at that level.
Right.
So for me, I just wore that, and I just worked, when I say tirelessly, like, shout out to Neil Dominique, too, who's Bryson Tiller's manager now, but at that time, he was Puff's right hand, like his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I used to stay up all night, and Neil, I used to sit with Neil, because Neil knew everything, like what Puff liked.
But what were those nights like? Like, what was happening? Like, what was going on?
It was like, it was like, oh my God, it was like making decks.
Okay.
I was making presentations and decks every day, all the time. Mm-hmm. And the way it was is like, there would be, so this is the beginning stages. So you have visuals, right? So I'm doing decks with creative, like style guides and vision boards and all that. Okay, this is what Revolt should look like. And then here's the first 500 tweets, and here's the first artist we should cover, and here's our strategy for social, here's our strategy for video, here's like what our website should look like, here's what the mobile app should look like, here's the mission statement, here's the manifesto, here's the Revolt value pyramid, here's this, here's that, here's this. And the
and
way
this
it
was bouncing off ideas, or this was
no,
just
was
putting it together.
Yeah.
And
okay.
bringing it straight to him.
Got
like
it.
Every time. And so, and the way he works is like, if he says something, he asks for something, he's thinking about something,
right.
You better have it, and you better be ready to like deliver it. That's the way he works. So for me, it was literally all day, all night. If I wasn't in meetings, mm-hmm. I was working all day and all night. Like, I used to go to a certain Starbucks right out the Dream Hotel. So I used to stay at the Dream. I used to go right to that Starbucks and be sitting there grinding, go right to the FedEx, right to the Kinko's, get it bound, get them made, get as many copies as I needed. Because I was waiting for that phone call, waiting for that email. Yo, meet me at the office. Yo, meet me at my crib. Yo, I'm about to be here. I'm on my way to this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go through this now. It used to happen like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then after that, I'd be in the office. Okay, boom. I'm up at the top of 1410, at the top building, a little cubicle where the interns is at in the back corner, just working
right.
all night, you know what I'm saying, like waiting for the next day. And it was like that for like months, you know.
Was it nerve-wracking, or was it like you felt like you was working towards something anyways, even though, like, because you know it could have just got scrapped, like, you know, we know how things work. It'd be like an idea, but do you still feel like
I mean part of it was the, again, it was going down to proving myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to myself first.
Okay.
And then saying, because one of the things with him too is I always wanted to have a certain level of like respect. I used to always keep that in my head of like, you know, I'm not trying to gas him, I'm not trying to be a part of, you know, lifestyle, I'm not trying to be like Puff's friend. I'm here to like really get busy and do work and do this at the highest level and have that level of respect where he knows I'm gonna deliver, I'm gonna work hard, I'm gonna be honest, I'm gonna say how I feel. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so I was always had that at the forefront of my mind, which has made me work harder, you know. And with him, it was one of those things where he also knew that I wasn't a yes man like that. So we would have times where we would go back and forth and battle over what we thought was dope or what we thought worked or what we thought should be scrapped. You know, because Puff's the type where he's like, yo, that shit is whack, throw it out.
Or, right,
know,
right. But like, some people believe it and they like, but it's not whack.
Or like it'll be dope, but he'll just be like, yeah, that's dope, but like, at any time, I don't like that or I don't feel that. Or it's dope, but it don't make me feel like this. You know what I'm saying? And right, it's like, right. So you deal with a lot of that. So...
Were things shelved that then came around another time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Like, a ton of that stuff happened, like, things like that. But all in all, it was more of him. And some of the things he said at that period was like, yo, this is my baby. And if, you know, I'm going to entrust you with my baby, this is history. You know, black people don't get networks. We don't get... You know, stuff like this. So if I'm gonna entrust you to do this, I need to trust you. I need to trust your taste level. I need to be comfortable. I need to know that I can just let you rock and do this, and I could feel good. You know, and I could feel like it's a reflection of me. So that took months. That took like 6 months. You know what I'm saying? I would come to New York thinking I was gonna be here for a week and be here 3 months, staying in hotels for like 3 months at a time.
Because you weren't living at New York yet, like you were.
No, I wasn't living. I was in LA. So. Yeah, it was just super duper intense. But the game and, like, you know, he definitely, you know, took that role too of saying, yo, you're a young dude who has so much potential, who's like really doing your thing. Like, he really took his time to take those moments to impart wisdom and give me gems in game whenever he could. And a lot of that stuff, like, I'll hit him at times when it'll hit me, like, yo, when you said this or when you did this, or like, yo,
right,
I appreciate that. Yeah, like, yo, I appreciate
like
that.
Now.
Or this story, like, ooh, yeah, like, I appreciated it then, but there's certain things now that when I have certain experiences, it just instantly reminds me of certain conversations we had where it's like, ding, okay.
This is when this matters now. Yeah. Like, this is, yeah.
Because this whole thing is like, anybody who he's empowering, it's about preparing them for the level he ultimately sees them or they want to get to, you know. So he's trying to get you to that, he's trying to push you to that space.
Right. And since you've been with this since inception and very early on, how does it make you feel with like some bad report that's been coming out about Revolt and how like things are getting managed over there and like how they're not the most reliable and and how things are running? What's your take on that? Man, how do you feel about that?
My take on it, I'll say a couple of things with that. I think number one, Revolt will always have a space. Like in my heart, it'll always be a personal thing just because it was so personal. It's something that that time and that period and everybody who was involved in it, we literally poured like our lives into trying to build something special for the culture. You know, like everybody then when we didn't have offices and phones and trash cans or anything, you know, and we were cutting videos out of vanity rooms in the basement. Like, we all came together and really wanted to make history and do something. And we all worked like we wanted to make history. So I think for that, I'll always be proud of that. Like, nobody could ever take that away for those couple years. I think where it is now, I mean, I'd be remiss to say it could be the same when none of the same people were there. That's first of all, like, a lot of the core people outside of Vermont, who I mentioned, a couple other people, like, so many people are gone from that initial team who are thriving and doing amazing things.
I'm
like,
sure.
Where they are. So I think the core of that, I think it was a time, like, in a moment. And I think Revolt can rebound and get to a place where it has that same energy. Because when we first came out the gate, it was on fire.
It was really on fire.
We couldn't be, when we was in LA, we couldn't walk down Hollywood Boulevard with a Revolt shirt on. Like, it was like, yo, we trying to work for y'all, we trying to be a part of y'all.
We trying to do whatever we can.
It was a wave, you know? So I think their mission right now is how do you get that back? Because Revolt 2 was ahead of its time. There were, like, launching digital first, the conversations we were having, the videos we were putting out, the way we were putting them out, the relationships, the things we were doing.
I love
like,
breakfast how did y'all, being on there.
Yeah, like how is y'all doing this? And now, you know, with Spotify and Apple and stuff, we were thinking about and putting stuff like that out before Spotify was out, before Apple Music was out. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're trying to get back to that, and I think they can get back to that. It's how I look at it now. I just think it's about, you know, restoring positions and getting the right leadership and the right people in place to take it to that, you know, to that next level. But a lot of the people who were there in the beginning simply aren't there anymore, who are in the biggest kind of positions
to help shape
the ship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that definitely had a huge part of why it is the way that it is now.
Right. Understandable.
And I'm not in the trenches with that now to know about like what's really the inner workings are over there. But
right. I mean, I just ask more because, you know, it's almost like saying like we can never have nice things. You know, like something started amazing, Revolt was great, people of color, everything, and then over time it just from reporting and just how the backlash and the report, it just seems like it's gotten watered down over time. Not saying that people are not putting out the best work that they can, but when we rely on those leaders that you speak of and we haven't created the next batch of leaders that can still uphold it, it just...
See, this is the thing. I think that's a bigger problem in media in general. Because I feel like when you try to take something that lives and dies on a spirit of authenticity and boldness and fearlessness and being like connected in a very genuine way mm-hmm. to the culture and the audience you're trying to move, whenever you try to super corporatize that and make it something that's a business first instead of
for the people first,
but when you are forcing that down the throat, you only have two options. You either say, okay, we're going to be this corporate business, right? Like where now it's about bottom line and dollars mm-hmm. and running like a company. Or you go against that, but then you recognize that if you go against that, you're going to get that backlash and that bounce back. And like you're going to lose a lot of support and a lot of people who are around you. I feel like in a lot of these situations, even for companies that appear successful, that may be doing really cool things, at the back end of it, you definitely have a lot of people who are all about the corporate side, all about the ad dollars, all about like dictating what it sounds like, looks like, and is like. People who aren't even in the building on a day-to-day basis. People who are not a part of the staff, who are not supposed to be making decisions that are dictating how these properties work, which is the crazy thing is we're in a time where there's more media outlets than we've ever had, but we've never been in a time where people feel like media is more full of shit. So I think that alone is a testament to just the overarching thing, because I feel like most media entities come out the gate with an ambitious mission and then catch a wave, but at a certain point they hit a U-turn because of that. Like mm-hmm. now it's like, how do we sell this? How do we make sense of this? How do we make this profitable? How do we make this, you know, translatable to, you know, all these different people? And it's like, well, part of you shouldn't be thinking about that. You should just be out here creating the lane and let everybody catch up or let everybody figure it out. And that's what people don't do.
That's all the
politics
involved.
That's when the sellouts happen.
The sellout, U-turn, sellout, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So I think that's just an overarching problem in media. And I think with Revolt, that opportunity truly to create something that never existed, that could literally pave the way for the future, was very real. Like that opportunity, that window was open and very, very, very real. And hopefully it gets to a place where it steps back into that place of doing that.
Right. I hope so too.
Wow. That's a lot. That's because it is a bigger issue, and it's something that we're constantly like faced with all the time, especially working in media. You know what I mean?
I mean, we're called non-corporate girls.
Yeah.
because
this is our constant battle. So, I get that.
For you both saying that, what do you guys feel like, having been in media and knowing the landscape, are the big, if you were to briefly hit like your bullet point of what the big plaguing issues are, what do you think those issues are?
I think not enough cultivation for creativity would be my biggest issue with anything dealing with media, especially in a corporate structure, because I feel like they want you to be creative and they want you to present something different and be innovative, but then there's all these blockages, you know what I mean? They're like, well, we can't do that, just like you're saying. Like, it's like, well, this is just gonna make the money. Like, there's all these things, and it's just like, how can you want me to grow and grow your company and put my best foot forward if you're always gonna tell me no? At least that's what I face.
I feel like so many people in so many different companies, big and small, face the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Right.
And then for me, I would say that it has to do with, cultivating, but also collaborating. Because for me, where non-corporate comes in is the fact where there's a lot of entrepreneurs, but I come from a space with wanting to create innovation for a company I work for because their values hold true to mine. We align on a lot of things, but it almost comes where we compete, and now I'm seeing has, instead of like somebody I collaborate, I'm seeing has,
Aren't about entrepreneurs. They're not about entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, this is my company, this is what we're doing, this is the game plan.
So it's like, cool that I'm making you money, but as soon as it becomes an interest that's solely for me, now there's a problem. And it's like, then that creates an issue with culture in the company and people feeling like there's certain things I can't do because I could get in trouble, or that like I shouldn't put too much out there because now is a conflict of interest.
And then also growth, because what are we doing? Like, now I'm doing the same thing always. You know, your ideas, this is what's happening, but how am I growing from this? And I feel like that's why turnover gets high, because then I want to do something different now. You know, I want to try something different. I want to be in an atmosphere where I can do something different.
You know what's crazy is when people talk about this generation, like job hopping, what they never talk about is how all these companies make people want to quit. That's like that's a huge part of what they never talk about.
And I'm like, you see our face.
These millennials just can't stay at a job. You're like,
We feel so entitled.
Right.
Right. But you're like, if you ever worked at some of these big companies, you'd realize why people don't want to feel like they're in school again. They don't want to do busy work. They don't want to be bored. Mm-hmm. And there's no free gym memberships or free lunch or bicycle rides. You can give them.
Right. Like, these incentives ain't going to keep me here.
Right. Like, because
the check is not enough.
Yeah, like, just because you put a water slide outside and bring a DJ and some free pizza does not mean.
Every Friday. Right.
Every Friday. Free pizza Friday.
Right.
Like, it's not going to
keep. And this is what we constantly face all the time. Like, we've been in several different companies and this is just what we face all the time. I mean, and part of it could be maybe we're not picking the right companies, part of it. But there's another part of it where, unless you're a startup or a tech company or you have a cool thing happening, a lot of these companies have this corporate structure where they say they want to bring something innovative. They want to bring young people. But then at the top, it's still the politics. So when it trickles down, you still don't matter anyway.
Right.
So what's the point?
What is the balance then? What is the medium of creativity and commerce? What's the happy ground?
And that's where we're trying to fill that gap and like answer that question, because we're not saying that we're against corporate, you know? Like, this is not like, oh, nobody should ever work for a corporate company.
Yeah.
But I feel like there has to be a better way to educate HR, educate the people on top of how to bring these creatives on board. And you could still make your money, but you need to understand that, like, the way you're, I mean, because at the end of the day, what do you have to lose for giving this a chance. I feel like at the very minimum.
I mean, it's about a lot of people don't want to think outside the box though, right? A lot of people are stuck in their ways, especially top down, because you have these people who have, they're not outside. They've been in the same company for a long time. This is the structure. This is what they know. And it's all about the dollar signs. You know, they're not thinking about, well, we have to test a couple of things. We need to do this first to see. This could make a shift. This could actually happen.
But see, that's the difference too between leaders and visionaries. I think a lot of companies have great leadership, like people who are great managers of people yep. who can assure a company is successful, like it's going to hit the goals, it's going to make money, it's going to like it's going to be a company that people have to respect and give that credibility to, but it's not necessarily going to be one that like defines the future or
And Ryan said it. He said in 8 years, you know, God forbid, but some of these people are going to die. And not, no longer going to be here. No. So then what?
Have you seen the people making our healthcare plan?
Bruh.
Yo, have y'all seen these 90-year-olds out here talking about repealing Obamacare and they should be in the hospital?
Right.
It's like an oxymoron.
Look, every time I see Mitch McConnell, I think about the parent turtle in, what's that, Squirt's dad? The one in Nemo? Remember
his name? Oh, yes!
Mitch McConnell looks like
Papa
Squirt. Oh, my God. Papa Squirt.
Yeah, he looks like he just needs to be on Everest, but that's nor here nor there.
That's like companies, man. Yeah, these people are very old, and it's the idea, too, of... you know, everybody's like, we want to do this with culture and that, and these people ain't touched the culture.
No, what about
they
not?
Know about culture,
the people that say they want a diverse,
diversity and inclusion.
First of all, who made up the term diversity and inclusion? I feel like it was a white person. Honestly speaking,
a
let's not. That's a whole other thing. Like you have one token person, you're like we're diversity.
It'd be a joke.
See, the thing with that too is like, if a company was really about diversity, they would recognize that they had that issue even without adding more black people or more women, because like diversity is, in all intents and purposes, diversity in perspective. And
yes.
When you add women and black people, it's you're saying you're welcoming in not just a diverse skill set and
our school of thought.
It's literally a way of thinking, a way of seeing the world, a way of interpreting the world and translating.
Because of
things.
Our experiences are right. Defined that off the bat. Like it comes already with diversity and inclusion. Like,
right.
So if you have a whole staff that dresses the same, black, white, women, male, they all dress the same, wear the same glasses, like laugh at the same jokes, play the same music, like you haven't accomplished anything. It's like what
you're creating a cult.
Diversity of ideas and thought and experiences and who's represented. Like perspective is also representation, like representing different audiences and groups of people is missing.
I mean, the people who make up diversity inclusion in most companies are not, they don't know what that means. So this is why everyone looks the same. They hire the same people. They do the same thing.
And even when there's like a multicultural department,
they don't know what that means.
They treat it like therapy. So once a month, we're gonna have a diversity meeting, and every black person, every woman, any person who feels like a minority can vent.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
And they just vent, and then that's what diversity becomes about, acknowledging a lack of accountability, and it's less about actually including anybody. It's more about, we're just gonna create a space where we can semi acknowledge that we don't get it and we're not doing it right, and so we're gonna let everybody who knows that, who feels underrepresented, tell us what we're doing wrong. And then we come out of that vent session, we're going back to business as usual.
New town hall meetings.
We may create a department for all of you to be in. We may give an incremental budget so you guys can go do some like diverse documentaries and some diverse stuff.
It's like separate messaging.
And
when the message should already be for the... for the masses. I mean, yeah, like, you get what I'm saying? You can't separate a message.
That's how.
See, you know the danger of that, though, is if you truly had diversity the way that it's supposed to be, right, two things would happen. Number one, the hierarchy in credentials, per se, like in terms of the pipeline of, oh, you need a Harvard degree, you need this, you need that, wouldn't mean shit. Because you'd have people who never had a degree who would be shining harder than people who had degrees.
That would mess up the balance.
Then at the same time, it would neutralize race in that way, because then it's like, okay, it's just about who's doper. And 9 times out of 10,
we are.
So then you got that. And then on the third hand, then you got the issue of the way the industry would change, because then the leaders of these companies, you would start seeing, it's like in the NBA, right? Like when you start letting black people play, the NFL, when you start letting black people play baseball, we start letting Dominicans, black, Puerto Ricans play, they dominate the league. You start letting them come in, literally the people who are the stars and dominating these industries would be minorities, people who are left out. And then all of a sudden, it's like, where does everybody else go? It's like reverse gentrification. We didn't gentrify the industry, so where does everybody go?
And that they scared of that.
That's what I'm saying. That's
a scary thing.
If you don't think these people, like owners in the NBA, blackballing Kaepernick, if you don't think these people will be having conversations like that, like,
I don't know.
Where would our kids work if we did this? Where
definitely.
You know, what would happen?
They think they're going to get X out.
These are all the conversations. This is what it's about.
And now with social media, they better watch out. Be careful that somebody ain't Snapchatting that ass. Because it'll come up. Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Every day gets more like creative on how somebody creeps on somebody's conversation, right, or right, invades privacy. It's nuts.
Well, on that note,
well, we had like mad questions.
No, but we have to get to one more thing before we wrap up. Okay. We have to. So, hashtag obsessed with is one of our segments where we highlight a woman or men or platforms that we think are just doing it in the industry. So, we wanted to like throw that ball your way and see if there's any.
Obsessed with.
Yes.
Who's your hashtag obsessed with?
Yes, who's your hashtag obsessed with? It could be a person or a platform. Mm-hmm.
Preferably a person, because we want
We want to hear what you think.
Man, what am I obsessed with? Hashtag obsessed with.
Who comes to mind?
Yeah, it's.
Hashtag I'm obsessed with Zane Lowe.
Oh.
Yeah, I study him a lot. I watch a ton of Zane Lowe. If anybody who doesn't know who Zane Lowe has been a DJ, a radio personality. He's with BBC for like 12 years. He's done all the huge interviews from Drake, Kanye, Jay-Z, everybody. Kendrick, everybody. Now he's on Beats 1. He's like the main anchor on Beats 1. But I watch his stuff all the time. I think he's extraordinary at what he does, and just his technique and his style, I feel like, is inspiring to watch. So he's somebody that when, like, I watch him and I hear him and I see his path and know his story, it's inspiring.
Have you met him?
I've never met him.
Oh, you know.
Nah.
Makes sense.
And so, you know, like, I grew up, of course, I respect the Angie Martinez and Flex and Elliot, people who are really from the culture. Seeing Zane Lowe literally transcend, like, he can go from interviewing Paul McCartney or like all these different people in completely different worlds, and then still, you know, get the biggest artists of the culture and the biggest people in the space, and it's always something that nobody else could do. It's always conversations nobody else would have, and it's like so conversational and so authentic and so dope. I can just sit there and watch it. So I love Zane Lowe, and I feel like anybody who aspires to have conversations for a living or do this in the business, they should watch Zane Lowe. So Zane Lowe for sure.
And this you bring us many firsts in this episode, because this is the first male obsessed with.
Yes.
You are the first guest and the first guy that brings their knowledge, like,
yes,
all over in the platform. Like, we just big up women, and so we wanted it to be plot twist episode 20. Julian Mitchell, first male on the show.
Yeah, we gotta show them in some love. So yeah, I would say right now I'm obsessed with Zane Lowe, watching Zane Lowe videos. Kendrick, of course. feel like he's just
obsessed. Yes.
Him and his evolution. I just love it and where he's going.
We just talked about him today.
Yeah. Who else am I obsessed with? I'm always obsessed with James Baldwin. I've always been super obsessed with James Baldwin.
Like
James. I wrote my thesis in college on him.
You quote him a lot on your Instagram.
Yeah.
The first book that changed my whole outlook on everything was Notes to a Native Son. Mm-hmm. And it was his response to Native Son and Richard Wright, who also wrote Black Boy. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I'd ever read anything that made me completely understand every single thought, feeling, challenge, conflict that I ever had internally. It's the first time it all just kind of clicked. It was like, wow. You know, like rage and trauma and doubt, and but also the other side of it, like the brilliance, the confidence, the just understanding the whole, but then at how it relates to the systems that run this country and the rest of the world, and how it reflects the way that we see ourselves and envision our lives and everything. And that took me down a path that blew my mind. And that's the first time too where I started rethinking everything I thought about, like blackness and race and racism and all of that. And then from that path, reading, going from there to reading Race Matters by Michael Eric Dyson. No, Cornel West, I'm sorry. Cornel West, Race Matters, reading that book. And reading about like nihilism and the nihilistic threat, you know, like living without belief, without purpose, and like understanding that context. Then going back and reading parts of the Baldwin collection, like Go Tell It on a Mountain, The Fire Next Time, and then I read If Black English Isn't Language, Then Tell Me What Is. And then that's where he was explaining how language is a tool of like colonization, right? And appropriation. It's like the first major tool of appropriation is language. And like how the whole idea of appropriating movements, like culturally, he talks about jazz and the beat movement. Beat to your socks was a term they used in Harlem when all the poor people looked like they were beat up, like beat to their socks because they were poor. But then like that turned into a beat movement. Oh, it's like that wasn't even the context of what that was about, and jazz and everything. And then that's what I ended up writing my thesis on. It was Baldwinism, and it was English language functioning as a system of colonization in like a post-colonial America. And it just took me down this whole path of merging that perspective and reading about existential alienation and all this stuff. I wrote this review about To Pimp a Butterfly, and I opened the whole thing up framing it around James Baldwin's idea of existential alienation, like displacing yourself, to strip yourself of your identity, all to then return and be able to form your own identity and see clearly the impact you want to have, like on the space that you're in, right? So just all of that, man, and like I'm always obsessed. I'm always watching James Baldwin talks. The last one I watched, he did a whole back and forth conversation with Dick Gregory. It's like a throwback. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That it, where he predicted a black president back then, that he said at this time, like in this era, we would see a black president. He said that way back then. It's just like, that dude's a prophet, and his words are incredibly genius. I'm glad I Am Not Your Negro came out, and people are really catching the James Baldwin wave.
Right.
And then now living in Harlem, I'm super obsessed because, you know, he had his stomping grounds in Harlem. So yeah, so I'd say those are three people I'm very obsessed with at the moment. Zane Lowe, Kendrick, and James Baldwin.
Three greats.
Mm-hmm. So.
And Logan Browning from Dear White People, because she's incredible.
Oh my God, yes!
That's
She just got put onto it.
Oh my
god. She binged on it. Isn't that show amazing?
Obsessed.
If somebody happens to send Logan Browning a link to this, she should know that.
We will slide in her DM.
We got you.
That. Shout out to her because she's doing amazing.
And
she
we
killed
love,
that role.
Yes, we love her.
Killed that role. Honestly. And then on the last, we just want to give you a chance to wrap up. We introduced you, but how do you want to introduce you? And what do you want to leave people with that listen?
Yeah, I would say for me, Julian Mitchell, I'm just a person who is driven with a vision, who's passionate about making culture smarter, about empowering people and giving people the tools and tips as I'm growing and as I'm evolving, as I'm learning more. I want to lead by example and really shift the paradigm of things, you know, and like use the tools that I have to design the type of culture I see that I want my son and people who are in future generations to grow up in the same way that the culture raised me, the same impact it had on me. I really want to use as much of my energy and effort as I can now to define that for, you know, the future. So for me, all these different things that I do are just platforms to me to, whether it's writing, whether it's these talks, whether it's teaching, whether it's building things and working with people in places, it all ties back to this one cohesive drive and vision that I have to ultimately be somebody who can spearhead a movement that will make our generation care about being smarter and being individuals and thinking for themselves and defining things for themselves. And because that's my personal mission and experience. Like, I'm imperfect, I'm a regular person, I'm a human, I'm learning. So as I'm doing that and still able to have these platforms and have this drive and this mission inside of me, I want to like combine the two and take the lessons and things that I'm seeing and learning and apply it to the blueprint of what I, you know, I'm out here trying to create. So that's...
So I hope you guys heard it here first. Julian, we thank you so much and we
thank
appreciate you.
Yes.
And the fact
that I was the first, damn it.
You were
and you picked up our phone call, which Ryan said, pick up people's phone calls because a year from now they might not pick up yours.
That's one thing you can say. I've been genuine with y'all from the first day.
Yes.
Yo, hands
this is
down.
This is who you are.
This is
who
you
are.
That's why we grabbed
you. I was going to say our auras.
Yes. So wait, I gotta ask you, when's
Black
your birthday?
Black vibes matter.
Black vibes matter. I like that.
Yeah.
BBM.
Let me quote you on that.
BBM.
Black
vibes matter. When's your birthday, Julian?
November 19th.
Oh, you a Scorpio.
Scorpio. And on that note, we're about to peace out.
We out.
Bye.